Hey, sweetie, your mother showed me this Carvana thing for selling the car. I'm going to give it a try. Wish me luck. Me again. I put in the license plate. It gave me an offer. Unbelievable. Okay, I accepted the offer. They're picking it up Tuesday from the driveway. I haven't even left my chair. It's done. The car is gone. I'm holding a check. Anyway, Carvana, give it a whirl. Love ya.
So good, you'll want to leave a voicemail about it. Sell your car today on
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Welcome back to Big Trouble in Little Podcast. This is the finale of the AI Picked episodes, and it's also the season finale. I'm Andy.
I'm Chaz.
I'm Joe Dubs.
Zach. Slick.
And for the finale, we're watching Heat.
Heat. We watched Heat.
Well, it's not a lot to say. It's not a lot to say, just Heat. But it does describe the movie quite well. Zach, this was your pick?
This was my pick, yeah.
Why'd you want to watch Heat so bad?
I wanted to watch it because Val Kilmer passed away a few months ago. And then I was like, oh, I should watch Heat again. That's one of his best movies he's in. It's funny, though, because he's not even really like a main character in it. He's like a supporting character.
He's just in it a bit.
That's like Tombstone, kind of. He's not really the main character in that either.
He's just there.
Him and his ponytail are both supporting characters, I guess.
Him and his beta liquid snake look, whatever that is he's got going.
Beta liquid snake.
I mean, like he is central to kind of the point, like the end of the movie. Like, but we'll get there. We'll get there. This is this, in a way, this is the crime movie. This is the heist movie. I mean, there's lots of movies about heists. And it's about like a bunch of slick criminals doing like Ocean's 11 type bullshit. And then, of course, there's crime movies that are like Goodfellas or something. But Heat is that extremely pleasant mixture of kind of both of those ideas.
Mm-hmm. So I was watching this. I watched this before a long time ago. Like, I don't know. I think I first watched it like fucking 20 years ago or something.
Hmm.
And then didn't watch it again ever since. I remember thinking, like, that was a good movie. I liked it. I watched it again this time, and I appreciated it a lot more.
That'll happen with time, I think. I mean, you kind of learn to appreciate things. Your taste changes. You get smarter. You're wiser.
This time, though, because I was thinking, it's like I've seen a lot more crime movies or stuff like that, and none of them are quite like this one, I think. Like, everything's got its own vibe, but Michael Mann is, like, a vibe master. Like, that's what he is, especially with the way he shoots things or something. He loves getting shots of dudes looking out at the ocean. That shit rules. There's, like, there's deep blue lighting that reflects onto people. He likes when people look out into cityscape kind of thing from really far, far away, high up somewhere. But I thought, this is like the Lawrence of Arabia of crime movies. This is what this is. Yeah. I guess.
Yeah, this movie reminds me a lot. It sounds really dumb to say this, but I have a reason for comparing this as opposed to other crime movies. The Departed, in the sense that The Departed is a unique movie in the fact that you are following simultaneous perspectives. Like, as a culmination of things and as chaos ensues. And that's what happens in this movie. Like, you're following several perspectives of each of these people, you know, whether they're aligned together, chasing each other, and watching as everything intertwines as the action continues on. And again, the main thing, I mean, if we have to consider two main characters, it's Pacino and De Niro, of course. Like, it's specifically following both of their perspectives of their ongoing cat and mouse they're having, because it's not just that it's just simply a cop and a and a robber or a cop and a bad guy. These two, like, seemingly are, like, the top of their respective game, right?
Like, well, that's why this movie is so fun to watch, is the two of them meet, and they both respect each other, and then they have coffee together, and they're like, yeah, you're pretty cool, but I'll totally shoot you if I have to. And that's kind of this whole movie, is the two guys respect each other, but, man, they got it. They're getting in each other's way, and that's no good.
Yeah. In another life, we could have been friends, but here it is. But, even early on, like, as they're discovering things, like, you can see that Pacino is thinking through, and he's 2 to 3 steps ahead of where everyone else working with him is on figuring out what needs to happen next. Because everyone's constantly guessing, well, why would they do that? And he's like, because of this, idiot. This is what I would do if I were them. And at the same time, even then, like, De Niro's also a further step ahead. Like, when they get made, and that's when that leads to their meetup. It's like they're both just, again, aces, and they're just playing this ultimate chess match that happens to involve, you know, lots of money being stolen and a lot of people dying.
Well, that describes the plot, but describe what makes this movie so compelling. Because there's tons of movies about crime.
Yeah, that's fair. Aside from the story beats, it's got a great mix of fast-paced action mixed in with a lot of the tension. The movie does, I think, a great job of pacing. Like, I don't think this movie is 3 hours long, and I never felt it.
Yeah, it's actually longer than The Assassination of Jesse James was, which I didn't think we were going to watch a movie longer than that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I never felt the this movie at all. I just was like, oh, I'm ready to watch more and more. And it's not like it's all just constantly action in your face. Like, there's plenty of, like, melodrama that happens in between, because it's not simply just showing crime and, hey, this happens. It's actually showing how each person's lives are affected by the actions they make. And it plays more into that as well. And it's not just that it focuses simply on those characters. It does a good job of really giving time to all the supporting cast. I mean, hell, they even, like, break on the side stories of the poor guy who ends up, like, getting out of jail, tries to get his life straightened up, isn't really getting a break.
Yeah, that's honestly, like, I love this movie to death, but that's one of the things that I'm still confused about. Like, it's compelling and it's interesting, but you got a 3-hour movie and you do so little with that. It's just, he's a guy and he, like, gets a job at this restaurant as, like, his halfway thing, and his boss sucks out loud, and his girlfriend or wife is like, I'm so proud of you. And then at the end of the movie, he throws it away. I mean, it's supposed to be like a crime doesn't pay. He shouldn't have done this or whatever. But the movie operates perfectly fine without him, I think.
No, it definitely does. It almost makes me wonder if there was more to be done with that. And again, they've already got 3 hours, so they had to cut something, and unfortunately that's what gets cut.
Maybe.
But then, like, you end up with a half-baked, like, plot arc. Because maybe he gets more.
He comes in at the end. It's almost as if, oh, fuck, we already shot the scenes at the end where he's here. Now we need to, like, bridge this. Because I don't know, something happened. Machete had to leave. I don't know. Danny Trejo was like, I can't fucking be in this movie anymore. You guys got to figure it out. And he just left or something. I have no idea.
Yeah, I also love that his name in the movie is just Trejo.
Yeah.
Didn't he compromise himself, though? Didn't he, like,
There's cops all over me. I'm sorry. I'm letting you down. And they're like, nah, it's okay. Just, you know, bail.
He's got to figure it out. And he sees a guy and he's like that he knows. And he's like, hey, you in or out? 5 minutes. And, I mean, the guy's just put on the spot and just makes the wrong call because of just the shit he's in. Kind of goes back to the whole thing of, like, you know, the system's just equally fucked up. They're not rehabilitating or giving anyone a chance to get out of what they're doing. Just like how the cop talks, browbeats Ashley Judd into betraying her husband because, oh yeah, well, your kid's going to end up in the system and they're going to end up fucked up too. Like, it's like he already knows how fucked up everything is. They're not trying to fix anything.
He's using it against her.
But she's ride or die. She doesn't even care. And ironically, the whole movie gives you that whole thing about how if you get heat on you, you can't have any attachments. And the whole there's such a theme, long-standing, about how those attachments hold you back from being able to be truly at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And it's eventually what gets Robert De Niro killed, but not the love. It's him just not letting go that Wangro is there. If he could have let it go, he would have gotten away. And ironically, he kept giving shit to Val Kilmer's character for not just ditching his woman. And it turns out she's the one that saved him, and he got away anyway.
Right,
and
he's the only one that lived. That's what I was alluding to earlier about him and his ponytail, which he has lost in that scene, sadly. But he completely ignores De Niro's advice, and it saves his skin. So there you go. He's the only one who gets away.
Literally, he's the only person that gets away. Yeah.
Tom Sizemore gets shot in the face by Al Pacino. Robert De Niro dies, probably. I mean, almost definitely dies. I guess John Voight gets away, but he didn't really he didn't do anything that drastic.
Yeah, he's
just gonna have Nicolas Cage steal the independence paper. I can't even fucking speak today.
The Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, there you go. That's the word.
Yeah.
I like John Voight in this movie. His hair is also funny. Everyone's got funny hair in this movie.
Yeah, dude, he's got the fucking Jerry Curl mullet. It is something. And he's just the setup guy. He's the guy that gets all the back end. Like, I got a guy that does this. I get you set up. I get you here. I'll get the plane. Like, he's that guy.
Speaking of weird hair on the screen right now, Al Pacino's wife has that weird, like, Uma Thurman in Pulp Fiction hair as well, which is also distracting.
Yeah,
it just looks wrong. It looks wrong on her. She looks like too old for that hairstyle or something. I don't know.
And she's fucking John Connor's foster dad.
Oh,
is that who it is?
She kind of looks like Natalie Portman, which is funny because Natalie Portman's her daughter in the movie.
Natalie Port person.
Yes, Port person.
Natalie almost unalived herself.
Yeah.
You think Al Pacino was like almost off the rails in this movie a few times?
Yes. I mean, he kicked a TV out of his car. And then, you know, this whole, like, him trying to get all the, like, clues where the Robert De Niro's fucking crew was. Especially this part where I have on the screen right now, if you're watching YouTube. And he's talking to this guy. He's like, "You got a great ass," and I'm like,
I'm like, there's just a few times in this movie where he had moments where he was just going like fucking like crazy, and like kicking the TV out of his car thing was one thing, but I'm like this scene, or like when he talks to that guy who's like supposed to help give him information early in the movie, like
right, yeah, like kicking the car out of the or kicking the TV out of the car. That's direction. That's in the script. But he is like, I mean, I want to say he chews the scenery, like he really gets into it, but it's appropriate. Like, he only does it when it adds to the movie. He doesn't take anything away from the scenes he's in. He really does seem like an unhinged kind of like Mary do his work cop. Like, that's a mouthful of cliches right there. But again, like Heat is like everything that came before it, it perfected, and then it influenced everything that came after it.
Yeah.
Like, Heat got all the cliches and all of the tropes just right. At least, I mean, that's my analysis of Heat. Is like, as far as a crime movie goes, like, this is it, man. Michael Mann, like, got that formula down, and then he and everyone else has kind of, like, chased it since then, and they've tried to tweak it a little bit, but... Yeah.
I would agree. It is one of the perfectly seasoned contemporary crime films.
Like, I could be attacked for saying something like this, but I really think that Michael Mann does a lot of things in this movie that people like Quentin Tarantino wish they could do.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah, good. Okay, good. Because, like, Tarantino is not trying to make Heat. He's not trying to make this movie, but he's trying to do some of the things that Heat does extremely well. I think even he'd agree with me on that. Maybe. I like to think so. I don't know.
I think a lot of people probably tried to do things Michael Mann did and couldn't do it as good.
Guy Ritchie, for instance.
Yeah, or Christopher Nolan, or fucking, you know, so on.
Yeah, I mean, there's also, like, the shootouts in this movie. Like, I know it's a movie, right? But, like, realistically, cops would not... And I understand they would be justified to shoot them because they have guns and they're shooting them.
In crowded streets and stuff. Yeah, that bugged me too.
Yeah, I was like, fuck, man. There's so much fucking backstop there of fucking civilians getting killed.
Yeah, this modern day shooting out in the middle of all that. Like, turn off your body cam. That would be the...
Though it does lead to one of my favorite parts of the movie is Tom Sizemore's getting away, and he like grabs that kid, and then Al Pacino's got that rifle, and he's like points it, and he shoots him right in the face. Like when I was watching the movie, I said, "That's right, go fuck yourself, Tom Sizemore."
Oh yeah.
Like it's just, I don't know, it's like the adrenaline builds, and then that's the punctuation is Tom Sizemore getting shot in the face. It's very funny.
Yeah.
So
and then he dies with a funny look on his face, and then it just escalates from there.
Yeah.
That's another, like, I mean, again, I love this movie dearly, but there's a few things about it that I don't love. The casting of Tom Sizemore still bothers me. I cannot see him as a tough guy. I can't see him as a hardened criminal who went to prison and calls people slick or whatever. Like, it's so hard for me to see that in him. He's too comedy adjacent.
Yeah, I always remember him from Saving Private Ryan when he threw his helmet at the Nazi. I was like, that's what I remember him as. I got a question about that scene with the kid. If we never got the context of him having a family and him like actually loving kids and stuff, would you think he'd use the kid as like a human shield if we didn't have that context?
Sure. I mean, I think he's just desperate. He's doing what he can to get away because he knows he's in trouble.
So, yeah. So you think he's using the kid as like a shield essentially so he won't get shot? Because what I thought it was two things. I thought it was A, you know, he just wanted to get the kid out of there and he like lift her up and try to get the kid out of the, you know, danger zone essentially.
That didn't occur to me at all.
Nope, because he immediately turns around like, you know, he is definitely taking a hostage.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I think. That's how I interpret it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a precedent was set in like the very first little bit of action you see in the movie where they like jack that armored car. I think those guys, except for fucking Charles Manson, that guy that looks like Charles Manson or whatever.
Oh, Wingro.
Wingro, yeah. I think they usually try to avoid killing people if they can help it.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy fucked it all up and they got pissed at him and beat his ass over it.
They don't do that annoying thing where they like turn to the camera and explain what the hell's going on, but it's implied that's additional heat that they don't want.
It's to avoid the heat.
They can be wanted for robbery or they can be wanted for murder, and it's two very different things. But as long as one guy's dead, fuck it. Well, just kill them all. Like, because if you're wanted for one murder, you might as well be wanted for three and have
to explain. Not just that, like Pacino explains it. Like, why leave a witness?
Yeah.
Yeah.
God damn it. We gotta kill all these dudes.
Yeah. I mean, obviously he's pissed about it because he takes it out on Wingro and then he decides to kill that guy.
Apparently Wingro is also just a serial killer casually throughout the movie where they give you the one snippet where he kills a poor young
teenage
prostitute.
Don't sew that up. The movie does not resolve that.
It's no different than the poor guy. Like, you get the story arc that's half baked, and then he just dies. It's that. It does that. That is the one fault of the movie, is there are some loose ends that don't make too much sense, but overall they don't matter because the core of the movie is still what it is.
That reminds me of a thought I had watching this movie. Actually, is, and we've said this on the show many times about many different movies, but if this script surfaced now, this would be an HBO Max 8-episode event. This would be like they develop that. They develop the guy with the halfway job at the diner. They develop all of this stuff. They develop Natalie Portman's character more. They develop all of that out to hell and back. And you'd have 8 to 10 episodes, and they'd each be an hour long. And it would cost a gajillion dollars, and it would be an HBO Max exclusive or Apple TV exclusive or whatever. And I was watching this movie, and I thought, this is another one of those, but fuck, am I so glad it's not. Because this is way better than that would have been, I think. Like, I love just a little less than 3 hours of just skimming the cream off the top. That's what this movie is. It's like that other stuff's there because that stuff is there in real life. There's everyone's got stories in and out of everyone else's life. And I think that's what Michael Mann's going for. So he says, look, there's a lot of stuff going on. These guys aren't the only people in the world. And maybe they should acknowledge that they aren't the only people in the world. Maybe that would have made them, because kind of that plays into both Pacino and De Niro's stories. But I don't know. I had that thought. I grandstanded there a little bit, but that was a thought I had during the movie, and I thought that made a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. No, it does. It does, because at the same time, like you said, it's much more grounded and real in that way. Because again, stories have so many stories have the fault of you become a vacuum within the story that's happening, or and ignoring what else is going on in the world. So you're definitely right. Like. Yeah. Everything else is happening simultaneously too. Everyone else is still affected. So,
do you guys remember that there was a Amazon Prime show called I think it was called No Time. No, what was it called? No Time to Die, but No Too Young to Die, something like that. It was a Nicholas Winding Refn thing, and it was 10 episodes long. And I thought, oh, Nicholas Winding Refn, I fucking love this guy. I'm gonna love the show. But it just overdeveloped a bunch of characters that are just so. Boring. I got like 5 episodes in and I stopped watching it. And it should have been a movie. If it had been a movie, I know it would have been great, because every episode had like 20 to 30 minutes of great stuff, but then it also had 30 to 40 minutes of just like, oh man, I do not give a damn about this character. Why are we doing this so much? And yeah, I think that's what Heat would have become.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I think a lot of people, like, you know, want to deep dive too much into like a world that they're watching where they don't need it, essentially, because I do like these supporting characters. You know, even though the Allstate man just like fucking died and kind of for nothing in our eyes. He just didn't want to fucking deal with his dumbass boss and stuff. But like when you deep dive into like the world, sometimes the world doesn't need to be explained. It could just be subtly talked about, just like in Children of Men. Like, we saw the newspapers, we saw that subtle talk about New York, and that's all we need to know.
Yeah, I like that. I like a movie to assume I'm intelligent.
Too many people now like to, they want to see everything. They want to see every conversation. They want to see every mundane fucking aspect of somebody's damn life.
They want narration. So
something happens later, it's like, oh, I knew all this stuff happened because I saw all of it before. You don't need to know all that shit, though.
Like, everyone sees a guy make a sandwich, and they say, how do you know he had mustard in that fridge? How do you know? We didn't get a scene where he buys mustard. How did he know there was mustard? It's like, man, sometimes there's just mustard.
Who cares if it has mustard or not?
Yeah.
That's
I don't know what... Well, I don't know where else to take the conversation about this movie.
Al Pacino very did violent. Awesome. He did awesome besides when he was going ape shit sometimes, I think. I think he was almost a little too much sometimes.
Maybe.
Just a little bit, I think. It didn't, like, take me out of it or anything. I'm like, he's almost on the edge of just flying off the rail over there. But
maybe that's what you're supposed to think, I guess. Maybe that was his direction.
But I guess, I mean, so. I felt like that's okay. Yeah.
It's weird because... I've seen some Michael Mann's other stuff, and typically, like, his protagonist is not that guy like that, where he's like, he's almost turning it into a funny scene.
Like, no, I don't think it's, I think I read more into the fact that he really is unhinged. I mean, his third marriage is currently falling apart. He's got this fucked up situation where he is equally addicted to hunting down these people.
I know. Like, yeah. I know, like, what you're saying. I know what you're getting at, but listen to this. Al Pacino has pretty much acted like that ever since, whenever he's supposed to be funny in something.
Sure, he's over the top. I've watched plenty of movies. Yeah, no, I've watched movies with Al Pacino. What is it? Any Given Sunday, Sin of a Woman. Like, yeah, he goes over the top.
Of this.
Yeah, he does go over the top, sure. But yeah, at the same time, he's also, like, I think this is actually, like, it's like, it fits for the whole movie. He's perfectly seasoned. It's just right. It's crazy where you do believe he's unhinged, but I don't think he ever takes it to the point that you go, oh, I've lost investment in the moment. Like, I never feel like I lose any disbelief of what's happening because he's acting too crazy.
He's well casted, and he acts well, and he's well directed. I think everything kind of pulls together for like a perfect performance. I hate to say it, like, Al Pacino is great. Like, you know, he's in Scarface and Godfather, and I fucking love Al Pacino. But I kind of lump him in. This is only in the 2000s and the 2010s now, but I lump him in with like with like a Nicolas Cage or even an Adam Sandler, where like they're just cashing checks, but then every once in a while you'll get just the right movie and they actually try and it's fucking great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just to be clear. Yeah. I'm not saying he ever pulled me out of the moment anywhere.
Sure. It got close.
That's what I'm saying. This is it. This is the moment where I think this is at the end of Al Pacino being truly great. Yeah.
I was going to say, plus it's kind of funny, we started with a De Niro movie, we ended it with a De Niro movie, basically.
<You did.
laughs> We bookended it, both ends.
The thing with Al Pacino, because like I said before, with the cops shooting with civilians around, like, kind of pulled me out a little bit, but I understood it's an action movie, and like that it was still fucking cool to watch, and I was like, fuck yeah. Like, them shooting down a fucking street was fucking badass and stuff.
I didn't give a shit. I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After that, I was like, I'm up for like eight more hours. It was hard for me to go to sleep.
But two things, like, one was more of a disappointment, like when they're doing the stakeout and stuff in the truck, and they kept on zooming on this guy who was fucking clumsy the whole time, and he like makes a bang, and Robert De Niro's character was like, oh, we gotta fucking leave. We're compromised here. I was like, because Al Pacino is like spiraling in this movie, I thought that dude was gonna get fucking like beat the shit out of or something like that. Like, he would beat the fuck out of him, but nothing happened. So I was disappointed with that.
I was thinking about that scene in The Departed where is it Alec Baldwin? And he gets mad at that one guy. He says, "Come here, can I talk to you for a second?" And, like, starts screaming at him, hitting him, or so whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I kind of thought that was gonna happen.
I expected like at least a tongue lashing. He didn't even do that. You know,
nope,
he didn't like verbally cut his balls off or anything.
Yeah. And then the second thing is like before the coffee scene, like he's speeding like fucking so fast, and like I loved the whole camera thing. I was like, that's so fucking 90s, like even like late 80s type of camera style right there. It almost looked like a fucking music video, like from Phil Collins or something like that. Can you feel it coming in here or something like that? But yeah, he like speeds up and I'm like, oh shit, fucking shit's about to go down. I'm like, and then I thought like, oh, did he pull over the wrong dude and it's like a decoy car? And then you find out Robert De Niro's in there and he like does, he goes, want to get coffee? And I'm like, really?
Hey, it leads to like the best part of the movie, in my opinion, when they have that conversation at a crowded diner.
Yeah, that talk is amazing. They like they are equal adversaries, fully respecting each other as masters of their craft, but also realize they diametrically oppose. They will have to confront each other. Only one of them will live. Because Pacino has no hesitation to kill him if he has to, but Pacino doesn't want to kill him. He just wants to take him off the street and stop him.
Hmm.
But De Niro made it very clear he's not going back. So that is what it is. And that's how we get the ending. Although, the ending. If he could just fucking let Wengro go, if he could just fucking let him go.
He was caught free. He was getting out of there.
He's out.
Dude, I was so fucking mad because I'm like, you know, Edie's on your side. You got the girl. You're going to fucking New Zealand. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, I gotta go kill this Trevor guy from fucking GTA 5.
He spends. That's exactly what I thought. He spends literally the whole movie telling everyone about how they can't have attachments. They can't hold on to shit. And they give you the red herring that, you know, his girl's going to be the thing that maybe gets him caught. And no, it's that he couldn't give up someone pissing him off or betraying him.
Well,
he had to let it go.
That's not really, like, he said you can't have attachments, you have to be willing to walk away from anything. Wengro is something that he walks toward. He was ill prepared for this life lesson.
Sure. I think that you can say walk toward, but like he had the option to walk away from something and he couldn't let it go. He couldn't let his own ego go. I think the thing is that he always took that whole attachment thing to mean love, but you know, we also succumb to our own pride and ego. Hate.
Like, he that wasn't the lesson that he had learned. Like, he was ill equipped to.
Oh no,
he
I get what you're saying.
Understand it the way you're saying it. Yeah.
Well, that's the point though. Is I think he misinterpreted it to be, oh, you you can't have loved ones. It's like, no, it's really anything. Like, if you're truly going to be that way, you really have to be able to detach yourself from all of it. Yeah, like when you're.
But it's also just so double heartbreaking. Like after she gets upset, and then he convinces her to go with him anyway, and then he just leaves her there.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of leaving her there with the car, why does everyone in this movie drive a Camaro? There's like four Camaros in this movie.
It's 95. Camaros are badass.
I just assumed like GM like sponsored Heat or something. I don't know.
Was that a Camaro? I thought it was a Pontiac Firebird.
I thought it was a Camaro.
No, I'm pretty sure it's a Camaro. They even say when he's getting the cars ready, he gets them pairs of Camaros.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. He has a Camaro, and the Val Kilmer has a Camaro when he's getting out of the movie. And someone else has an 80s Camaro. Oh, it's the cook slash the guy who just got out of prison. He's got an 80s Camaro, mm-hmm. too.
Michael Mann likes Camaros.
I guess he does. Guy's got taste.
Trejo had an El Camino.
Right. GM. They're all Chevy.
Poor. They put Danny Trejo. They put the Mexican in the El Camino.
That makes sense, though.
This typecasting. Oh, man. I think I stick to the point of this movie is like perfectly seasoned. They took the steak and they cooked it beautifully. They got a beautiful blend of exactly the right mixture of things. And it's like almost like lightning in a bottle, right? Because you said like people have tried to replicate it
right
before and after, so they just
including soon Michael Mann himself. Did you guys see he's making Heat 2?
I was joking about that.
Yes, in pre-production. Now,
oh my goodness! What?
I saw that and I said, "That's fucking stupid." I'm pissed off. And then I looked into it a little bit. He's gonna direct it and he's writing it. So you're like, oh, okay, well, maybe it could be good because it's going to be about the same characters. It's going to be about De Niro and Pacino before Heat, and it's also going to be about Pacino after Heat a little bit, apparently. That's what the synopsis says.
Whoa.
But he has a co-writer, and it's some woman who has literally no screenwriting credits. I have no idea what's going on.
Before I met him, I was a lesbian. Just take it over the top. Like, just I want them to go so far into what just piss everyone off in the funniest way, but also to still make a compelling badass movie.
Make your layman gay.
Yeah, that's what you do.
Well, it's gonna be Natalie Portman as like the cop or whatever, and she's tracking down all those robberies. And
you could do that. Yeah. That could be interesting. I guess maybe I don't know. Have you guys seen a lot of Michael Mann movies?
Go first, Doc.
No, I don't remember. Unless you say one of his movies, I don't remember seeing any.
Collateral? That's a big one.
Collateral, Ollie. I was looking earlier.
Public Enemies.
Yeah, Last of the Mohicans.
Hunter, Thief, The Keep.
I've seen Manhunter. I've seen Public Enemies. I saw Collateral one time, but I don't remember it that well.
Oh, Collateral. It's pretty good. It's funny. Collateral, I only ever remember two things about the movie. I would love to watch it at some point again. I almost even picked it for Christmas. Yeah, but there's the scene where Jamie Foxx is just waiting, and a body just falls randomly on the car, which is, like, so just jarring. But then also the scene in the club where he kicks a guy's leg in, and I don't know what it is about how he filmed it. Man, I remember when I was a teenager seeing that, I was like, what the fuck? it was brutal.
No, I actually did see that movie. My favorite part of that movie is Jamie Foxx and Tom Cruise are in the fucking cab, and they, like, the shot, there's a shot of, like, hyenas or, like, cougars or whatever, or lion cats or whatever going across the street, or... And then all of a sudden, Audio Slave comes on, fucking Chris Cornell. Once upon a time, I'm like,
I forgot about that. I was gonna save this for a host credit scene, but I watched Michael Mann's Miami Vice, and it has two Audio Slave songs in it. So I guess he just fucking loves Audio Slave, which. Same, but just that's funny. It also has Jamie Foxx in it.
Interesting.
Now, but what I was gonna say is also apparently he directed Last of the Mohicans, which had not occurred to me until just now. Which that's kind of interesting. But it's weird. All of his movies are either nowhere close to Heat or very Heat adjacent, and that seems very strange to me.
He has a certain flavor. He does, which is crime shit.
That being said, Heat is his best movie, absolutely, and I think that's true. I think I still like Thief a tiny little bit better. A little tiny bit. I like Thief. Thief's a good-ass movie. Anyone seen Thief?
No, I want to, though.
It's from 1981. Stars James Caan. It's very good. It's very much like, as far as tone and setting goes, it's kind of a dress rehearsal for Heat. Like, it's got a bunch of, like, savvy criminals and stuff in it. He also did, Zach, I was telling you about this movie one time. He did a movie called The Keep, and it's literally about, like, this castle keep in Europe where there's Nazis and they're like doing some stuff, and then there's werewolves. I think I can't remember. I've literally seen the movie and I can't remember, but it like some supernatural bullshit happens.
I remember you telling me about the movie. It's like, that movie actually sounds kind of cool. I think I'll see it.
It's pretty cool. Like, it's not great, but it's like, what the hell is going on with this movie? It's pretty wild. But I like Michael Mann. I just kind of wanted to discuss him in general. Like I said, I watched Miami Vice and I'm ready to talk about that a whole bunch. Collateral's cool. I did not like Public Enemies, and Ferrari was pretty good.
Public Enemies was eh. I remember thinking it was eh when I saw it in theaters. Maybe I'll watch it again when I do my – I guess I'm going to do a Michael Mann deep dive.
Well, then you should get Criterion Channel because they have a Michael Mann collection up right now, and they got a ton of stuff.
Because I think I'm a Michael Mann guy now.
You should watch Ferrari because I know you like race cars, so
– And I like Ferrari. That's a Michael Mann movie, and Adam Driver's in it.
Yeah. Just remember, like, when you go into it, it's not just about racing. But there is a lot of racing.
That's fine. Yeah. Manhunter, though, I think Manhunter's what really set it off for me. So I knew what Manhunter was before I went into it, which is, like, it's just another adaptation of Red Dragon. Or whatever. It was the first one, though. And it's pretty different, though, from, like, how that other stuff turns out later, you know? Like Silence of the Lambs and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Silence of the Lambs is the one everyone knows.
Manhunter has like a fucking vibe to it. Very hard.
Oh, I've seen Manhunter.
I guess I kind of need to see it. Like, I was looking into it because I was like, I don't think I've seen a lot of Michael Mann movies. And I looked him up. I was like, I've seen like all of these. I've seen all of his movies except Manhunter, whatever the hell LA Takedown is, and The Insider. I think if I see those, I will have seen pretty much his whole movie filmography. He's directed like some TV episodes I haven't seen, but.
Watch Manhunter. Manhunter's cool.
Yeah, I think that's the top of the Michael Mann to watch list. I actually like. I only kind of half wanted to watch Miami Vice, but I read like on Reddit, some guy was like, "Hey, I watched Miami Vice on the Criterion Channel. It's fucking crazy." I was like, "Okay, I want to watch a movie that's fucking crazy." It was fucking crazy. He was right. It's so weird. It's such a weird ass movie. Like, you keep thinking this motherfucker directed Heat. What is going on in this movie? It's weird. You'd have to watch it to understand what I'm trying to say, but it's like the direction and tone is all like askew. It's strange. Also, everyone talks like this all the time and they're very serious.
Batman voice. Oh yeah, the guy from Batman Returns who the penguin bit his nose off, he was the guy that got shot in the fucking Dodge Ram in that abandoned parking lot, and I thought that was funny.
Oh really? I didn't recognize him.
Because I was like, this dude, the guy's nose bit off. He's dead.
That's a weird person to recognize and a weird reason for it.
He has a really distinct face. He just looks like a wormy little shithead dude who wears glasses like from the 90s. That's just what he looks like.
Fair enough. All right. Well, what else? What else you guys got about Heat?
Fucking watch it. It's great.
Do you recommend it? Will you ever watch it again? Because yes and yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes and yes.
All right. Well, we all loved Heat, and you should love Heat too. If you haven't seen Heat, go watch Heat. Oh, I don't want to ruin the ending or anything, but the final shot of this movie is one of the best final shots in all of cinema. I fucking love the last shot of this movie. It's so good. So I just wanted to say that real quick. But we all love Heat. Now we don't rank them. We ranking them. There's four movies. AI picked it because we asked AI to pick 10 movies that were thought-provoking, epic, a vibe, and a buddy film? Buddy, what was the prompt? Buddy something.
Buddies.
Buddies.
buddies,
Palerinos.
Vibe, epic.
Epic.
Thought-provoking.
It did pretty well on most of them.
It, did, pretty much did all those.
Yeah, pretty much. It's just, I still, like, not knowing that AI picked was the theme. If someone saw this list of four movies, I wonder what they would assume the theme is.
Yeah, I don't know. They probably couldn't get it.
No. Probably not. I don't know. I think all they could really think was no, not even that. I was gonna say like ensemble casts, but Children of Men only has like two big stars in it, so that doesn't work.
One of them's only in it for like 5 minutes.
Yeah. The genre's all over the place. The release dates are pretty all over the place. Yeah, I have no idea. Whatever. Let's rank them. Chaz, you go first, just because you're at the bottom of the little list there.
Oh, sure. So at number four, I have Midnight Run with 1 point. Number three, I have The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford at 3 points. At number two, I have Heat at 5 points. And number one, I have Children of Men at 6 points.
All right. Zach, you're next up in the little list.
Can you read it?
I'm just gonna read it. Midnight Run at fourth, 1 point. Children of Men third at 3 points. Jesse James, Robert Ford, 4 points, second. Heat's first, I gave it 7 points.
Ooh. He's a Heat man. Heat guy. Midnight Run getting dunked on. I'm going to continue that trend, unfortunately. I mean, it was good. I like Midnight Run a lot. It's just, you know, it's up against some heavy hitters here. But yeah, okay. Midnight Run, number four with 1 point. We're gonna keep that going. I put Children of Men at number three with 4 points and Heat at number two with 4 points. I don't know what else to say about it. I love both of those movies, but Heat edges it out. Heat is just such a finely tuned cinematic weapon. I don't know what else to call it, but like I kind of spoiled, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford is like one of my favorite movies period, so it had to take number one with the remaining 6 points.
All right, with me, I have Midnight Run with 2 points at number four. At number three, I have The Ass of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford at 3 points. Children of Men with 4 points at number two, and Heat with 6 points at number one.
Whoa. It sounds like Heat's taking it.
I think so. I'm doing some math here.
Sounds like Heat's getting away with it this time. Whoa. Midnight Run is fourth, unfortunately, because it's going to have 5 points, which is, yeah. I mean, again, people are going to say, oh, Midnight Run got last. That movie must suck. Wrong. The movie's good.
No. If I hated a movie, I would give it 0 points.
Yeah. So we all gave it points.
Yeah. Yeah. The Assassination of Jesse James is going to be number three.
You guys hate it because the title's too long. I get it. That checks out.
I love that you type the abbreviation. T-A-O-J-A-J-A-B-C-R-F.
I'm very lazy. I'm very lazy.
Although, Zach typed Ass James Calford.
Yeah, that's pretty good too. You could go with that too. Like I told you guys, I researched that movie more than any other thing we watched this season, and that's a really fun part about it. Is between articles and Reddit and IMDb and everywhere else, everyone abbreviates the title of the movie differently. Everyone, no, there is no uniformity online about what we're going to call this movie. So I think everyone just ends up calling it the whole thing because they want to sound smart. But I know. All they do is hit Control V because they've got it on the clipboard. I'm sure of it.
So is number two Children of Men?
Oh, he's got to be, right?
Yeah, I'm sure Heat won. Yeah, Heat won by a bit of a landslide. That's fine. I really enjoyed Heat. Slide. It's just Children of Men's a different movie, and it's just near and dear to my own heart, but that's okay. These three were really good. I really enjoyed it.
I said I gave the same amount of points to Heat and Children of Men, but I think that's what it boiled down to, is Children of Men is a good-ass movie, but it makes me feel like, oh, man. And Heat is a good-ass movie, but it makes me feel like, oh, man!
It's a lifestyle movie.
It's funny, though. A cold shower would fix both of those feelings.
That's true. and Will. All right. Well, anyway, our final ranking is Midnight Run with 5 points. The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford with some amount of points. I'm not going to do the math, but you can figure it out on your own because you're a smart viewer and you're a pretty cool guy. Number two, Children of Men. Number one, Heat, all caps.
Yes.
Heat. Again, brings me back to, it's not much to say, Heat. What movie did you watch? Heat. What?
You gotta say it like Heat.
Heat. I hear a lot of people say Michael Mann's Heat. I guess they're like, that's not enough. I've got to put a little more gravitas behind this one. Anyway, that's it for this season. This has been season 3 of Big Trouble in Little Podcast. Obviously, we still have host credits scenes, so stick around. We're not going anywhere. But we always tease what we're watching next time. And I don't know. We'll be back in a couple months, a little less than 2 months. I don't know. It's a long break. We're very lazy.
Yeah, it's like a month and a half.
Month and a half, we'll be back. Don't you worry. Watch this space. Make sure that you like, comment, and subscribe, and make sure that you follow us on all the stuff. But in the interim, we're gonna have some other stuff for you. We got some video gaming content, and I was discussing with Zach today. We're gonna try to do some Gundam content for you because we're massive nerds. And I was gonna get with the other two of you also, and see if we can do like at least a one-off. I want to plug the void with some interesting Gaiden content, but we'll see. We'll discuss it. But I'd really like to at least get some mecha anime bullshit out there in the void, because Zach and I really dig that stuff.
I have an idea. We'll talk about it after.
Okay, cool. But so yeah, don't count us out. Stick around. We're still gonna have some more stuff for you. But if it's movie ranking that you enjoy, then you're gonna have to wait until we come back for season 4.
Yeah, don't worry. We'll be hot and ready. Coming in, I think.
Hot right already.
Well, just like that Little Caesars you love. I think we'll be coming in right for Halloween. And you know, it's one of our favorite months.
We always have a warm-up month. We have a warm-up month and then Halloween. It's just for season 3, Zach got us started early with Drax. He dracked it up.
That's true.
Took us to Dractown. That's Transylvania Drax. For the layman. Anyway, we do have a host credits scene. Yeah, usually I just choose who goes first, but I blanked. I don't know. Dubs, you go first. You go first, buddy. Come on. What do you got? What have you done in the last 24 hours?
Nothing, really.
Oh, come on. You got to have something. This is our season finale. You got to have something big.
I put a video about, like, the best Bond theme. And
I watched it. That was a cool-ass video.
Nor did Seth Bandy.
Well, I had heard that song before, but I didn't know all the history about, like, they tried, you know, they submitted a song and they're like, yeah, this is fine, but no. And then they wrote that song specially for it. I had just heard that it was a song that was turned down or something. I didn't realize how in depth they had gone. To clarify to the viewers, it's a 10-minute video. I can't remember the guy who made it. I'm sorry to that guy. But it's about the Radiohead song that they submitted to be the theme song for Spectre. Mm-hmm. And it was a way better song than that Sam Smith song that they actually chose. Yeah. And you think, oh, it's Radiohead. I'm sure it sounds Radiohead-y. It does, but they still incorporate all of the original, like the stuff that makes great Bond themes very creatively and very well. And it's just a cool ass song and I like it a lot. Well, it's just called Spectre. So, I mean, by all means, go listen to it.
It's not the first time that's happened.
Oh, for sure.
For sure. YouTube channel is called Listening In.
There you go. Give it a listen. Some of it is like a little music theory-y. So if you're not a musician, parts of it might go over your head, as it did for me. But it's still really good, and it also, you know, talks about like some of the best themes. And again, we did a special one time where we ranked all the Bond movies, and we ranked the Bond themes. We each chose our top 5, is what I mean. But still, it was Chris Cornell. Chris Cornell's got the best one. What else?
That's it.
All right. Done. How about Chaz? How about you go next? What cards did you play?
Nothing. No cards. I played a little more Expedition 33, and I mean literally like a half hour. I literally did nothing else but a couple fights. And
when we come back, you'll have to say what a gym it was.
Oh, I can't wait to talk about it. But I did pile through a lot more Righteous Gemstones. I'm now a whole season up from where I was before.
Dubs, and we got to get you watching it next.
That show is so funny. It's so great. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Highly recommend it. If you're a fan at all of any of Danny McBride's other things, definitely watch it.
I will do.
That's all I've got.
Don't you want to talk about Summer Games Done Quick? Speedrunners?
Oh, yeah. I didn't forget about that. Yeah, which I guess you'll bring it up too. But yeah, I watched a couple other videos there. Watched the guy just ass blast his way through Blasphemous, which was insane.
16 and, minutes, he said?
Yeah, 16 minutes. He beat it
that's
in 16
that
minutes.
That's crazy for that game.
Yeah. Shit. And then there's like the speedrun with the Final Fantasy IX one's not at, like, okay, it exists, but it's not like, oh, it's. Because you have all the cheats and stuff from the international edition, you can literally just skip through. So it's like, I looked at that and I was, it's okay. Watching these, sometimes it's like your mind just melts to butter and you're like, how the fuck did they do that? This is one I watched and I was like, I could probably
I get
do
it.
That. Yeah, I was like, I could probably do that.
That's something interesting about speedrunning is they always have categories. There's like glitchless and then there's do whatever the hell you want, break the game to hell.
Yeah.
And, you know, watching one can be more interesting than the other. Sometimes they're both interesting. Sometimes one is just, you know, I manipulate some of the stats and I beat all the bosses real fast. Like, you know, whatever. I mean, there's a few games, Ocarina of Time, for instance, there's a glitch where when you get to the very first boss in the Deku Tree, you can manipulate the data and be at the end of the game when you're fighting Ganon.
The fuck?
So it's like extremely broken, but a lot of people don't do that because it's not as interesting. They do glitchless or the whole thing or you know, they just do minor skips instead of this big stuff or whatever.
Well, and I know, like, the ones I really like, the Metroidvania, so there's, like, glitchless, there's any percents, like, so it doesn't matter which ending you get, you can literally just do any percentage. There's
credit
the ones
roll.
That,
that's
like,
all you're looking for. Yeah.
You have to get 100% of the map and everything, too. Like, it's neat, like, which different categories they have, so...
Speaking of different categories they have, one of the best games for speedrunning. It popularized it largely, and it still to this day is very interesting, Super Mario 64. They did the Super Mario 64 120-star speedrun live tonight. I watched it because it's always fun. There's a new trick toward the end of a speedrun for 120-star that takes place, that level that's in the sky. There's the boat on the rainbow and all that stuff.
Rainbow Cruise.
That stuff, it's terrifying, though, because at that point, you've got, like, an hour and change invested into a speed run. And if you, like, screw up, all that works out the window.
Whoa.
So this really hard trick comes at the end of a speed run. It's so interesting that, like, popular YouTubers, I think Summoning Salt did a video about it. If not him, someone else did a whole video just about this one trick, about it being discovered. It's literally, like, you jump onto a ledge, and then you have to have Mario crouch, and he, like, turns to the left a tiny bit and jumps and then jump kicks and then does some stuff. And then you have to pause three times real fast. It's like a bunch of nonsense like that. And the video is like people had tried to do it for days and days and days and days and days on Twitch before they could finally get it down. This guy got it in one fucking try, and it was really cool. It was like one of the most exciting moments of a GDQ I've ever seen. It was really good.
I like, imagine when they went for it, like, everyone lost their shit.
Yes, absolutely. Well, they had to warn the crowd. The one of the guys on the couch said, he's about to attempt this famous trick. I need silence until he gets the star. Because until he gets the star, there's still work to do. And we really need silence. And the whole room was silent the entire time he was doing it. It was really cool. And then the moment he touches the star, literally standing ovation.
Oh, that's awesome. I want to watch that.
I love Mario 64 speedruns. They're some of the most fun to watch. But yeah, I watched that, and I watched a few other, like, snippets of some other stuff. I want to go back and watch a few of the ones I missed when I was at work. It is Sonic 2 one, and Sonic 2 and Sonic 3 always have really good speedruns too.
There's a wide amount of stuff, and it's interesting to me. It almost makes me want to think, is there, like, some niche game that I enjoy that I also could get, like, a platform and go and do that? Like, not that I would, like, do anything that would be amazing. It's just, like, can I run through the game kind of quickly and enough people would watch it? Because, like, there's some weird stuff out there people are playing. And it's just
last year, a guy beat the world record for Ocarina of Time any drum percentage, meaning he beat Ocarina of Time with a drum controller. It was very funny.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's got to be something for you. I'll bet. And that's what I said. You said, "Oh, I got real into it." I said, "Oh, great, he's a speedrunner now." And you said, "Far from it." I said, "We'll see."
I don't know. I got my fingers in too many pies, but I mean, I play games quickly. I don't do the brain fried glitch stuff, but like very much like glitchless stuff, I could get down on. Like I could do that type of thing.
There's a few. I've watched a lot of Summoning Salt, which I still highly recommend to you. You should watch Summoning Salt videos. But there's a few videos where he goes through a few of the old Mario Karts and like track by track the record progression. And a few of them, I'm like, I could do that. I can get on the board for this Mario Kart 64 track. I'm pretty sure I can. I haven't tried it. I don't think I'm going to. But like you watch it, you're like, I get it. I think I know how that works.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I'm already talking too much, so I'll go next if you don't have anything else.
That was it, yeah.
Like I said, I watched Miami Vice. That movie is... Now, that movie is a vibe. That's a vibe-ass movie. It does feel like kind of a nostalgia bait cash-in, but it's Michael Mann, so it's serious, and I don't know. It's hard to explain. It's a very weird-ass movie.
You ever watch the TV show, any?
Not once.
I feel like I need to go watch it.
Go watch it. It's from the 80s, right? Like 84, 85?
It's, yeah.
That could be good. I also found out that Michael Mann directed that remake or that later day soft reboot of Miami Vice, and then he also directed an episode of Tokyo Vice for HBO Max. That's a series I've always meant to watch. I read the book, so I was like, oh, I should watch the series and see if they do it justice. But I read the book in college, and I don't remember a lot of it. But I guess his episode's really good, so maybe I'm going to check it out. I watched some Summer Games Done Quick. I already talked about that. And I watched Dragon Ball Z on VHS.
Why?
Well, I finally discovered something that is fun for me to try to collect, you know, here and there. That isn't a gajillion dollars because I'm still always, you know, I've had some F1 cards come in from eBay the last couple weeks, and I still look at some Pokemon stuff. I'll show you guys that Mewtwo card I really want. By the way, if I can hit 1,000 subscribers on Big Trouble Rips, which I've been putting a lot of time into, viewers, listeners, if I can hit 1,000 subscribers, I'm going to buy that Mewtwo card. That's going to be my reward. That one I showed you guys ended up going for $202. I said, okay. But we're on our way. I've been doing a lot of Big Trouble Rips actually as well. I should mention that. Please go. That's not going anywhere. I'm going to do that every day unless something weird happens. But anyway, the Dragon Ball VHSs, I've always had a couple of them, and I've started looking into it, and you can get them on eBay for like nothing. And I run into them at like shops once in a while. Like places will have VHS, that Starship Place down in St. Albans has some, and like Goodwills. And if I see one, I was always like, oh, I'll pick up a Dragon Ball tape. That's funny for a dollar. I was looking into it. I'm like, you know, I kind of just want these. And it's really easy to go on eBay and someone will be selling a whole bunch of them and they'll be like $3 to $7 per tape. And then shipping is always like $4 to $5. Well, you just message them and say, hey, I want a bunch of these, combine them all. And the guy's like, fine, whatever. You can have all of these for peanuts. And then you pay $5 shipping. I've done that 3 times now, and it's working out really well.
All right. Well, nice. I'll keep that in mind because I like to also occasionally collect some VHS stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I know you like cassette tapes too, but like, I don't know. I was always fascinated as a kid because all the Funimation Dragon Ball releases, the spines connect into like a big long picture for each saga. And that's what I'm fascinated by. But I've discovered the rabbit hole for home releases of Dragon Ball Z is
crazy.
Infinitesimally deep. Like, yeah. They've screwed up every single home release of Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z some way for decades. All of them have something wrong. And obviously the VHS is no exception, but it's fun for me. I like having the VHS. They all have really shittily put together advertisements before they start for like the toys and the cards. I love them. They're so cool. And right, but like after the commercial for the action figures and right before it says, oh, prepare for Dragon Ball Z, here's the opening theme. There's like, say no to bootleg merchandise. And it's a couple pictures of like shitty, late 90s bootleg Dragon Ball stuff with like a big like cross across it. It's so of its time and so interesting, and I really like it. It's very funny. But it's the kind of thing, it's all cheap and it's easy for me to like kind of get into. I've been watching a bunch of YouTube videos trying to educate myself, because like some sagas were only released uncut. There's no home release of the cut version. And then some sagas are only the edited versions, like Dragon Ball, not Z, just regular Dragon Ball up until episode like 28 or something. You can only buy edited home releases of on VHS. They just plain never released it uncut. And then of course the big, they're called the blue bricks of the DVDs. They suck out loud. Like the picture quality's bad and the audio's off. And then Dragon Ball is just not popular enough, so they haven't really done a lot with it. And then some studio in France like put out like an amazingly good version of Dragon Ball, but then it got canceled after like two seasons released because it wasn't selling well enough, and they never released it with English subtitles. So I guess just fuck us, I guess. It's Dragon Ball. It's like one of the most popular things ever.
You know, we're talking about Dragon Ball. I learned something amazing. I did not realize how popular Dragon Ball was.
Zach's wearing a Dragon Ball shirt right fucking now.
Well, specifically in like Central and South America.
Oh, yeah, there's like murals like, and stuff.
Okay,
yeah.
Like fucking okay. It's like statistically proven when episodes of in like new seasons of the show would come out, crime would actually fluctuate depending on what was available. They literally called for a 2-week ceasefire when Toriyama died.
Oh,
cartels around the entire continent.
I get it. That checks out.
That's amazing. That's really awesome.
And we can't get a competent home release. I know, but But yeah, I realized, you guys might remember, I mean, listeners too might remember, I was talking a lot about, I watched all of Dragon Ball straight through to the end, because there were a couple, like, blind spots for me. I'd missed a few episodes here and there, like on Toonami or pirating it in college or whatever. So I watched all of Dragon Ball all the way to the end. Dragon Ball rules, and it made Tien one of my favorite characters ever. And then I decided, you know what I'm going to do? Watch Dragon Ball Z Kai. So I started watching Kai, and I watched it all the way to the end of the Cell games, which is where I think the quality of Dragon Ball stories takes a dip. I'm not saying it sucks. I'm not saying that. I still love the Boo shit and all that other stuff. I think after the Android and the Cell saga, it's never quite 10 out of 10. It's just 9 out of 10. So I stopped watching at that point, and I realized I've been like the tapes I've been buying, I've been focusing on Android saga, Namek saga, Ginyu, all that stuff, because that's my favorite stuff. But I keep getting bundle deals with like some of the Majin stuff in it, the World Tournament Saga. And I realized, you know what I should do? I should just get those, and I should rewatch the Majin Buu saga for the first time since I was a kid, only on VHS. So now that's my short term goal. I'm gonna watch Majin Buu, but it's all gonna be on VHS, just because it's funny to me. I like it. It's entertaining. And then maybe I'll finally watch all of Super.
No, don't watch Super. Watch Daima.
Daima, you're right. You're right. And then GT. Okay.
No, GT. You can skip GT.
You know, I never watched all of GT, and I feel like if I watched everything else, it would be like, I guess I might as well finish GT.
GT's fine. It's definitely got its flaws, but I will say the fucking soundtracks rip.
Okay, like, well, there you go.
Actual bangers. Yeah. They did some cool vibes.
That's
there.
Something to look forward to. But yeah, I never watched the last saga in GT. It's like where all the dragons are running around. The last thing I saw was the baby saga where he takes over Vegeta and a bunch of stupid stuff.
Yeah, you missed a lot, which again, not that you missed a lot of good stuff.
Well, that's the thing, is I was like, this sucks, and I just stopped watching it.
Yeah. It does.
Like, I don't know. It was just like that part. Like, I think it was like I was in high school at that point. And I was starting to watch other things here and there. So, but yeah, that's VHS Dragon Ball. That's my thing now. And I was thinking about this. I've been doing it for a couple weeks. I could have mentioned it before, but like today was the first. I got my VCR out and hooked it up and watched some of the tapes. Well, honestly, I watched them. Like, they're on, and I like play on the Switch or my phone a lot. But if we had, and we have a fair amount of listeners, and I value every single one of them, and they're all great, and I'd buy all of them a beer if they asked for it. But if we had more of them, I couldn't mention something like this because I would be scared to death of driving the price of them up because they're also cheap right now. This is like the one thing that I'm collecting that doesn't have a bunch of, like, you know, white whales. It doesn't have a bunch of grail items. The only stuff is there's a few, like, promotional Dragon Ball VHSs that are like $1,000 or something because it was the first time they released something, but that's not essential for what I'm collecting. So I've got it. And don't go driving the prices up. It'll make me cry.
You heard it there, people. VCRs are making a comeback, and you really need to get these tapes. So they're out.
You know
there.
They aren't, though, because at least one of the tapes that I got from an eBay auction has a couple rough spots in it. A lot of tracking went on, but hey, whatever. It's still watchable. I like it. It's part of the aesthetic. It's part of the experience.
That's right.
Zach, what have you done? You're going to be the last one this season.
I know.
Go.
I did a couple things. I saved some things from the last episode we recorded. I watched Jaws.
Hell yeah.
It's like the 50th anniversary of Jaws. I actually watched it twice in like a week, and I didn't mean to, but it just kind of worked out that way.
I mean, not a bad movie to watch twice in a week.
That's true.
I came home from work one night, and I was like, yeah, I got a few hours before I have to go sleep. And then I think I was looking at Peacock, and it had Jaws. Like, all the Jaws stuff's on Peacock right now.
Hell yeah.
And I was like, I'm gonna watch this because I never saw Jaws all the way through up to that point.
Huh.
And I did. And it was like, oh, this is cool. I like this movie. It's good. Don't know about all the other ones, but
don't bother. There's only one Jaws, so you're done.
Yeah. And then I watched it again outside on a projector with family a few days later. That was plus. I got to do this outside and drink beer and eat popcorn. I have to. Jaws is cool. Go watch it if you've never seen it. Then I watched some more Star Trek. I'm still watching old Star Trek. I didn't bother to talk about any of the episodes I did watch. There's one called Spectre of the Gun, which is like they reenact the OK Corral shootout with like fucking Doc Holliday and like all those guys. It's like they're like trespassing out in space, and then like some aliens just go like, fuck you, you're disobeying our orders, and they teleport them down onto a planet where they have to participate in a recreation of the OK Corral shootout, and they'll fucking die or something. I don't know. It was just funny because there's like they have guns now. They lost their phasers and shit, and Chekhov died, and it made you think that he really did die. Like he was actually dead. Because I read something somewhere where like the guy who played Chekhov was like, he took a break from the show or something at some point. I guess I haven't gotten to that point yet. I think he either bowed out of the show before it ended or whatever. And I thought, well, is this where they write him off? Because it just looks like he gets shot and gets killed. No, it was just fake out. It was a really good fake out.
The actor was probably like, I don't know where this fucking show is going to go. Fuck it. Fuck. And then he's like, oh shit, it's actually catching on. Fuck.
Yeah. I watched another one where it had Klingons in it. And this time it was like there was some kind of alien that was like making everybody hate each other more because it fed off of that shit or something. And it was like forcing the Klingons and everybody on the Enterprise to like fight each other. There was like some distress signal and they got in a tiff and they beamed the Klingons aboard because they were like, it was like a trick that they did to beam them on there so they wouldn't have to fight them. It's basically what it amounts to. And then they had to fight each other with swords and shit because this alien was, it got rid of all the, again, something gets rid of all the phasers and it's like, you have to use swords now. The entire ship. It was pretty interesting because I've noticed the Klingons have changed again. Now it's like they're making the actors put on this like bronzing makeup. It's not.
So they're getting closer, but.
And the men have like the crazier facial hair like that. That's starting to appear. But yeah, so it's getting closer to Klingons we know. That was a good episode though too. Then there was that one. I don't have any other ones to bring up. They're just decent or something. I'm almost done with it though. I watched the Back to the Beginning concert where Ozzy did his farewell concert last weekend. It was last Saturday. It was good. What was interesting about it was there's like a bunch of super groups they made up of like just various people that would form a band and then play. Like you had the drummer from Blink 182 and the drummer from Tool and the drummer from fucking Red Hot Chili Peppers all playing in a band at one time. And, you know, Steven Tyler made a surprise appearance and like did the best out of anybody, which was crazy. I didn't expect that because I heard he was retiring. Tool was there. There was like this thing going on where there's like, they're not going to show up. Like they weren't sure if they were going to be on there or not, because apparently Tool's weird about being recorded. Like even if it's like for an official thing, like they don't want to be on streaming. They don't want to be recorded. Nobody's allowed to fucking record their phone or anything.
Yeah, they are. They're kind of just weirdos.
Yeah. I thought it was like odd. But I didn't know about that. My brother explained it to me because I guess he's a bigger Tool fan than me. But I was like, oh, okay. Well, they came and did it anyway. But Ozzy did two sets, one with his solo stuff and then one doing Black Sabbath stuff with all of Black Sabbath. It was all the original guys, even Bill Ward. Bill Ward looks like an ancient turtle man now. It's just...
I'd always heard there was a pretty good reason he wasn't touring with him.
Well, I get, yeah. I mean, I heard like his health wasn't great, but I think also it was just like, I don't want to fucking do this anymore. Just like that too, more than anything. Yeah.
I mean, fair
very
enough.
Understandable.
Yeah. He did it for a while and probably did a bunch of crazy shit for like 20 years or something. He probably had his fill.
Exactly. But,
it was good. Everybody did great. Even Ozzy did great, even though he was confined to a chair because of his health, you know. Still sounded good. Then they did Mama, I'm Coming Home, and almost everybody was crying. But it was a cool concert. The only thing that sucked was if you were watching it live, they do like these 15-minute commercial breaks between sets. Kind of sucked.
Huh.
And because they had to get everything ready, I guess. You know?
Oh, yeah, they're moving instruments or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, but I know... I go on about this sometimes where I'm like real picky about audio. I could notice with several bands, like their mix fucking sucked and it was annoying. It's like when Tool played, you could barely hear Maynard doing vocals. And it's like, It's kind of a big part of like Tool is Maynard's vocals. And
maybe they'll clean up all that stuff and get rid of those intermissions and do a nice like release or something for streaming or whatever.
I think they're going to, because later on in the show at certain points when bands were playing earlier, because this was like an 8-hour show or something, really. They were playing stuff back that happened earlier in the day, and it was remixed, and it was a lot better.
Oh, so they were already fixing it.
Yeah, so that's good. That's all the stuff I watched, though. And then as for playing, I haven't been able to play that many games lately because of time constraints due to work and family stuff. Other than Bellatro, but I got a surprise gift this week. I got a PlayStation VR 2.
Neat.
I did not expect to get it.
One of those guys would now.
Yeah, I am. Like, through no fault of my own, I am. I was like, oh, cool. I'll try to use this. Thank you. And then like I got it all synced up and everything. And
Pistol Whip. Buy Pistol Whip.
I will.
You'll love it.
I also want to get Super Hot.
Yeah, Super Hot rules, of course.
Super Hot's good.
Did they ever do like a Super Hot 2? Or
yeah, it's called Pistol Whip.
Oh, it's just called Pistol Whip.
No, it's different. It's different. It's just like if you like Super Hot, you'll like Pistol Whip. They both scratch the same itch in different ways.
All right, fine. I have some VR compatible games already, which is funny. Like I've got three.
You got the Resident Evil.
Yeah, so I played around with Resident Evil 8 to get the VR stuff working to make sure that it all works and everything's calibrated correctly for me.
Sega's got a lot of VR releases too to check out.
Resident Evil 8 was pretty cool playing what little bit I did. It was interesting. I think what I want to do, though, is I really want to get Gran Turismo 7 now. I know I was talking about it before, but it's VR compatible. And everybody says when you play Gran Turismo 7 with the VR, it's like, oh my God, it's completely different.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious to try it with that. So at some point I'm going to get it and check it out, I guess. But yeah, I'm also going to look into like some of these more VR-centric games, like stuff that's made specifically for it and everything. See what I can find with that, I guess.
I've been swimming around that world for a couple years now. It's a little shallow, but it's pretty pleasing at times.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not going to expect a lot from it. I'm just going to, like, explore it, see what I can get out of it kind of thing. But it's everything I did.
Wow. Well, that's it. That's everything we've done, and we'll never do anything else ever again.
Bye forever.
Goodbye forever. But in the meantime, make sure you subscribe because there's going to be more. Get on iTunes and Google Podcasts and Spotify and YouTube. Like I said, there's some non-Big Trouble Little Podcast content coming. It's going to be video game stuff and maybe some Gundam stuff, which will probably have Big Trouble branding, a guide in or whatever. And speaking of Big Trouble branding, there's also Big Trouble Rips to go subscribe to. But that's just me. So if you hate me, maybe don't do that. But if you like the other guys, we got lots of other stuff coming up. And then we'll be back. Do we have an official season 4 date?
So if you watch video, we'll be back in September to record for October. So if you want to get if you want to get like an early access, even though you don't pay us a dime, you could catch us on Big Trouble Media.
Make sure YouTube. You subscribe to our Patreon, where you can get behind the scenes videos. No, we don't have a Patreon though.
Where we all go, we gotta take a shit. Bye, and then that's it.
We update it twice a year.
Yeah. If you're just an audio listener, then October we will be back.
October.
But if you wanna catch us, early September is. I don't know what date yet, but we'll be back in September video wise.
All the more reason to follow, subscribe. Then we'll be right there in your feed, man. We'll be right there for you. And we'll give you updates on all this other, the side stuff also when it comes out. So, keep your ear to the railroad track or whatever wherever you're at. Thanks for listening. All three seasons in the books. There's a big back catalog you can listen to too if you want. But if you're here right now, we appreciate it. Thanks for listening. And we hope to see you in another season.
We're about to turn into the four horsemen.
Yep, turn into four. We're coming.
Yeah. Later, guys.
Peace.
Hey, sweetie. Your mother showed me this Carvana thing for selling the car. I'm going to give it a try. Wish me luck. Me again. I put in the license plate. It gave me an offer. Unbelievable. Okay, I accepted the offer. They're picking it up Tuesday from the driveway. I haven't even left my chair. It's done. The car is gone. I'm holding a check. Anyway, Carvana, give it a whirl. Love ya.
So good, you'll want to leave a voicemail about it. Sell your car today on
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.